John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning, everybody. As we made it through another week, we've reached Friday. And, of course, hope everybody's got a good weekend planned. Hope everybody had a good week. It's not a good week so far for the Mariners with what's happened to them in New York. And we'll see what happens to them in Boston. It was an NBA draft last night. And so we've got stories. We got the five biggest stories of the day, and it's brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Here the pitch, swung on, fly ball, deep center field. Haniger going back to the one he tracked near the wall, leaps up. Has he make the catch? Yes, he does! Mitch Haniger timing his leap at the top of the wall, taking a home run away from Giancarlo Stanton. Holy smokes! Haniger getting back to the wall, that was the key, and getting high in the air to pull it back. And there's one away for the Yankees here in the bottom of the first inning. What a catch by Mitch Haniger.
Wow, is this guy good or not? Mitch Haniger, of course, now as good fielding as he is hitting, and we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Well, the Mariners lost to the Yankees 4-3 last night, so that means a three-game sweep, and they're on a four-game losing streak. That was a tough start for James Paxton as he gave up four runs in the first inning, two on home runs. Still, he was able to get to five, gave up seven hits and four runs, did strike out nine, but picked up the loss, and so now they have to head to Boston with the idea of trying to turn it around. Still in great shape. I mean, they're 18 games over 500, 17 games over 500, still in a good spot there. They are right now, still got a good distance over the Angels, but I think what it does show is that, they're in an American League with 300 potential win teams. They're number four. And are they going to be able to catch up? That's still a great spot. Cleveland's still getting hot at the right time, and they'll probably get to 90 wins. But if everything stays the same, still looks like, the Mariners will have a 90-91 win season. It's just a matter. It's like, okay, this was the wake-up call and see where they are against these really good teams. And they were played respectable, certainly against the Red Sox splitting. They got nudged out by the Yankees. And so you can just see Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, better teams. But the chance of making the playoffs look real good. They did get good relief help. Jason Bradford and Nick Rumbelo were able to finish out the game, not giving up hardly anything. And again, once you really get into the Yankee bullpen, as good as the Mariner bullpen is, and it's about the fifth best in baseball, the Yankees are better. And so they have good starting pitching, good young starting pitching. Luis Severino was sensational. He's a good one. But overall, it was a 4-3 loss. And so now it's a matter of heading to Boston and seeing where it goes. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
What's going on with Gene?
Yeah, Gene's got a little infection on his right arm. I don't know quite how it happened. Kind of like a little cut or scrape or whatever. And, it's all the sweat and dirt that he gets on these guys. It got a little infected. He's on some antibiotics, but it's pretty swollen. And, you can see a little, rash around it or whatever. So doctors are on top of it. We got some antibiotics in him, but we're going to give him the day off today.
So, Gene Segura got the day off yesterday with an infection on his arm, and we'll get an update from Shannon Dreyer at the bottom of the hour to see what it looks like for him being able to play in the Boston series. So, Andrew Remine was able to play, and it was kind of interesting and fun because his brother Austin is a catcher for the Yankees, and they had all kind of playful little acts as they were, going around there at the bats and all that stuff. That was kind of fun to see. As far as other injury news, Nick Vinson, who's coming back from that groin strain, is just scheduled to make one last appearance on Wednesday in Class AA Arkansas. That was supposed to be this past week, but it was rained out. So now what's going to happen? He's going to get a simulated game, and then he's expected to join the team either in the next day or two, but somewhere in that Boston series. And so at least the bullpen gets to be as full as it can be. Tonight, interesting game, or this afternoon if you want to call it that. Stephen Wright going against Wade LeBlanc. That was a classic last week when LeBlanc was able to shut out the Red Sox. And what we'll see is how good the Red Sox are against left-handed pitching. You saw that Paxton did well against them. You saw that it was a good performance by LeBlanc, and we'll see where it goes. I think everybody kind of figures, maybe it's right or wrong, that they're not that good against left-handed pitchers, but that goes. But a three-game series begins tonight at 4:10. Pre-game starts at 3, and again, Wright going up against LeBlanc. 7 2/3 last week for LeBlanc, and he gets the shutout.
Number three.
And I don't want to be overdramatic, but a suspension like this
it can derail your season. When you have a quarterback of his caliber that is looking to take a leap, as we all say, we want Jameis to start to make his way into the conversation of being a better quarterback in this league. And then you look at that division and how strong they were last year. And then in the offseason, retooling with the draft, all of these different teams, you got the Falcons, the Panthers, and you have the Saints. That right there, it puts this team between a rock and a hard place.
And so, once they put the news out yesterday that Jameis Winston was going to get a suspension, and some thought it was going to be as many as 8, we find out it's going to be 3. You know, the thing that was valid was that there was expected to be an announcement Friday. And what makes that valid is that it's the NFL with the Friday news dump. And so expect at some point late in mid-afternoon or so that they're going to put Jameis Winston on the suspended list. And apparently what it was, he's violating the conduct policy. And so, even though no charges were filed, in March 2016, he's at least accused, although not legally, but at least accused of allegedly groping a female Uber driver in Scottsdale, Arizona. No police reports were filed, and Ronald Darby, cornerback for Philadelphia, was in the car as a former teammate of his, but apparently he was not in for the entire trip. So first three games are tough. They have to take on the Saints, the Eagles, and the Steelers. There's a decent chance without Winston, this team's going to go 0-3, and if that's the case, that season could be washed. That's not good. Ryan Fitzpatrick will take over as a starting quarterback, but at least he's accepted the 3-game suspension, probably a negotiation because it could have been 6.
Number 4.
With the first pick in the 2018 NBA draft, the Phoenix Suns select DeAndre
And, of course, that's DeAndre Ayton getting the first pick going to the Phoenix Suns. Duke forward Marvin Bagley III went to Sacramento. But I'll tell you, it was not a lot of drama last night. In fact, its ratings went down from 2.7 to 2.6 because there wasn't hardly any trades. I mean, the only real trade was Dallas moving up or moving back from number 3 to number 5. And that took away all the fun type of players because Luka Doncic ended up going to Dallas, which is kind of a good addition to that team. And then you've got Trae Young going to Atlanta, and he's one of the most exciting players in the draft. And after that, Mara, this thing was boring. I mean, it was pretty. I mean,
you
it was
so?
Almost. It, oh yeah, yeah. Because I mean, what you want is that you want a lot of action. And when you don't see the trades, and once you make that swap from 3 to 5 for a number one pick, and there's not much else after that, the name factor. I mean, obviously the big news was the Michael Porter, local, going down and getting the 14th pick because of hip and back problems. He goes to Denver, so naturally he's disappointment. But I don't know. Did you think it was the drama was there?
About drama, but I always kind of like watching these kids kind of have their dreams come true. Brock brought up how and Ashley, yeah, I definitely took some of that from Ashley's excitement over here as well. Brock kind of brought up just how humble and how much humility a lot of the guys had when they spoke and how he enjoyed that. I like the fashion part of it too. I wish we could for the report card today, I wish we could actually show some video because there was some impressive feats as far as the inside linings of jackets and logos and all kinds of strange stuff.
Yeah, but that's that is kind of the interesting part about it. But yeah, I think the fact that these are all mostly one and dones or international players. I mean, as much of a college basketball fan as people are, they probably didn't have the great name recognition. And again, once you knew that the top picks were all kind of going, except for Porter, the way it was supposed to go, there was just no drama. And so it's kind of a boring draft, but at least it's in the books. Now it gets real interesting. In fact, one of the theories...
You save the drama for the offseason.
Oh, yeah. In fact, that's what people think, because you really have to go back to like 2000 and when LeBron James went back to Cleveland. Everything was on hold. Trades weren't really made because, I guess, whatever it is, everybody wants to figure out where LeBron goes. So I think the LeBron factor did play into the lack of trades and activity in the draft, but nevertheless, the draft is in the books.
Number 5.
It means the world to me, Not the fact that I'm home, I'm just put in a great organization, great coaches, I know it's going to develop me. And they, they take a lot of pride in me. They took a chance in me, and I'm just happy, man. It's just a blessing.
Mom, how do you describe this moment and how it's come full circle?
It's amazing. It's an experience I'll never forget. And I'm so excited he's coming home to be part of our Sixers family. It's amazing. Go Sixers!
Well, the Sixers went because, and the story is Michael Bridges, his mom and works for the team. And because of that, she was so excited that the Villanova forward was able to get drafted by the 76ers. Well, guess what? Within less than an hour, he was traded to the Phoenix Suns for Zaire Smith. That was one trade, actually. The Suns selected Zaire Smith, and so they traded him to the 76ers, and that means they get a number 16 pick in the 2021 first rounder. But how bad is that? It's like all the excitement. His mom's excited. My son's staying in town. They're going to be working for the same team, and the next thing you know, he's out in Phoenix. So kind of a sad story there. We had the excitement of that, and then the trade. That was one of the more interesting things in the draft. Hey, you can listen to my show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up, we go under further review. And now, Danny O'Neill brought up an interesting point about James Paxson, that a little bit of time ago when in that Tampa series, that he said that there's a hand cramp for James Paxson. Could that be something that has affected him in his last three starts? We'll get into that next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
on demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And of course, we review what's going on in sports. And of course, obviously, the Mariners are such a hot topic right now. But it was interesting that Danny O'Neill was wondering about whether a hand cramp may be affecting James Paxson. And of course, it's not a serious thing. But I'll tell you what, right now, you look at the scene. Before we get into that, we got to tell you the breaking news. Nick Vincent is officially now on the roster. He is in Boston and will be there for tonight. Ryan Cook was now sent down to the minor leagues. And so now the bullpen getting Juan Nicasio back, also getting Nick Vincent back, so that official move is in there. But, you know, you look at the big picture, and the big picture right now is that, and again, it was pretty clear from the Boston series that, you know, they can be competing against Boston, and they are lesser against the Yankees because they get the sweep, but all things considered, it looks like a very good sign for the Mariners, because the way that it is with their schedule and the fact that, you know, after this series against Boston, I mean, the only series is outside the division against winning teams are going to be, you know, three game series in September against the Yankees, and a series against Arizona, a series against the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that's it. I mean, that's nine games against winning teams that aren't in the division. Now, the bad news is there's a lot of good teams in the division. Now, the A's are back to winning, and so that throws more games against winning teams than that. But, you know, the A's, but right now with the Angels still banged up with the 15 players on the DL, and the fact that the A's are kind of up and down as a 500 team, and they're, you know, I think what the Mariners are 6-3 against them, you know, they're in a good spot. They're in a good spot to be able to, you know, get that wild card. But the one thing that can collapse everything and collapse the whole season, if there's an injury to James Paxton, because what you can see is that everything's set up, I think, now that, you know, the Mariners can make the playoffs, they can get in the wild card, and they play either in Boston or they play in New York, probably better for Boston because they struggle against left-handed pitching, and you need that left-hander in James Paxton. Well, Danny O'Neill brought up the idea about a hand cramp that Paxton had, and it was suffered in the Tampa series. Wonder, with the three off starts that he's had, could that be one of the issues with him?
No, I've got a different theory here for you.
Do you? Okay.
This is going to be something open up. Do you remember when James Paxton got the cramp? Got the cramp.
Yes.
After the third inning in Tampa Bay. That was June 10th. Because I've gone back and broken down his stats. BC and AC. BC being before cramp. Mm-hmm. Before cramp, his ERA was 2.95. His whip, walks and hits per innings pitched, was 1. His home runs he was allowing per nine innings was less than 1. Since the cramp, which, look, not to undermine my own research, but since the cramp is the final four innings he pitched against Tampa Bay, then he's pitched against Boston and pitched against the Yankees, which are two really, really good offenses. His ERA, 9.55. His whip has almost doubled to 1.94, and he's allowing 3 home runs per nine innings pitched, as before it was less than 1. Is Paxton hurt? Is the cramp that he's suffered somehow affected him now for more than a week?
Hadn't thought about it, but maybe so, because everything that we saw from James Paxton this year suggested that he's an ace, and every 5 days you're not going to get a performance. I don't care if it was the Red Sox or the Yankees, you're not going to see that from Paxton. He's going to shut him down. He's going to shut every team he faces down. But yeah, you're right. The last two starts, 7 in the third innings, 14 hits, 10 runs. His ERA is up to 3.72, so it's not the James Paxton we were getting used to seeing the 16 strikeout version of him and the no hit version.
And he climbed out of it. I mean, look, and this reminds me sort of Felix's performance where he struck out the last 16 of the last, or he retired 16 of the last 17 after having given up, what, four runs in that game, I think?
Was that against the Twins? I remember it was the start where he was awful in the first inning, and then all of a sudden was just a buzzsaw after that.
Yeah, there was an Oakland game, I think, at Oakland when he did that. And that's, at least you see Paxton battling his way out of it. And that's been kind of a theme for that we've talked about a lot on this show. I think that's the difference between this year and last year, especially with the rotation.
I think it's an interesting point because I think there's something to it, and no city in baseball can respect that as much as the Mariners, because you've seen all the injuries, and what happens is you see something happen like that, and then a week or two weeks, 3 weeks later, you find out that something really was wrong. I mean, what, Juan Nicasio, I don't know if this relates to his bad stretch early in the season, you wonder if that knee was an issue because his fastball was going down. It got down to about 92 miles an hour. I mean, you don't see any difference right now in the speed that James Paxton has, but I think maybe it's a comfort level and maybe it's an adjustment because, his struggles have been pretty much early in games, particularly that first inning of late, and maybe after an inning or two, he can get through the cramp and all that, but holding the baseball is one of the keys and having that grip right. And if there is some kind of a hand cramp, that would be a problem. We'll find out as time goes on if there really is something wrong, but Mara, that's got to be devastating because, I mean, James Paxton, they need for 32 starts. Simple as that. And again, you can maybe rest him a little bit at the end of the season because, if everything keeps on going the way it is, they will be able to, clinch maybe a week early as far as the wild card and then start to rest some guys. But the big key to getting into the playoffs is most likely they're going to be a wild card on the road, and they need that great pitcher in James Paxton to get the key to win that game and advance.
I completely agree. You need that ace, and it was something that they were missing all last year, and everybody was really happy to see Paxton step into that role clearly this year. It's, I don't think even if this is something that's bothering him that it's a huge issue. I think it's probably something that you would hope that he could fight through, but maybe they could give him a little bit of rest if they need to and get him back on track.
Yeah, but, like anything else, I mean, they need him. Now, the break comes up in the sense that, the schedule does lighten out. I know that they still have 17 games against National League teams, but all other than maybe the Dodgers are pretty average. I mean, you look at Arizona, they're leading the division, and they're batting .227 as a team, worst in baseball. And so, those are all winnable type of games. And so, the pressure on the, trying to get like a series like this, I mean, the pressure is more in the games against the Angels, which they survive winning three, and against the Astros, just so they don't get beat up too much as far as how good the Astros are. But it looks good as far as making the playoffs. But boy, if Paxton does have any kind of an injury that's going to linger and put his question mark out there as far as whether he can go in the playoffs or not, that would be tough. But they need James Paxton. Right now, I think, he and Edwin Diaz are the two most important players on this team. Diaz having an all-star season. I don't know how this is going to affect Paxton's chances of making the all-star, getting the earned run average up to .372. But he certainly, for many of his starts, is deserving of doing it. But they've got to do it. But I think Danny brings up an interesting point. I mean, he brought up the stat about, after the third inning in that Tampa game, the earned run average went from the twos to the nines, and the balls are flying out at a more of alarming rate. Again, he can still battle back and get the the good finish, but going five innings, I mean, again, it's better when he goes seven or eight, but as strong as he was, there's something maybe a little bit off in James Paxton as far as where that goes. In fact, what we're going to do is we'll find out what Shannon Dreher thinks about that, talk about all the other things going on with the Mariners. In fact, we're so fortunate right now because of the importance of the Mariners. Shannon's going to join us every day at 10:30 to give you the update on what's going on. So that's coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Of course, big series coming up against the Boston Red Sox, three-game series, and with this road trip going, with the three-game losses they have against the Yankees, not off to a good start, but of course, everything can be made up if they can have a good series against the Red Sox, and then remake up the ground coming up against teams like Baltimore, Kansas City. They start getting in some National League teams starting after that, but again, these are all a good situation. Again, they're cleaning up their slate as far as games out of the division against winning teams. Boston, obviously, one of the best teams in baseball. And joining us on the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. And, you know, sometimes, Shannon, I feel guilty when we call you so often because there's so much stuff going on. But thanks to you, you've consented to give us every day to give us all the Mariner insight of what's going on. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm happy to do that for you guys, John, and I'm just glad there's a lot of interest in it. They've been a lot of fun to watch this year.
They really have. Now, we got a lot of stuff to get into. First off, the move was made. Nick Vincent coming off the 10-day disabled list, Ryan Cook going down to the minors, and so that at least gives them pretty much most of the arms that they're going to have in the bullpen, and that's an important thing.
It is, and if you can get Nick Vincent back to what he has been for the last 2 years, that's a significant add to this team. And him having some downtime might not be a bad thing. He's a guy that's got a lot of innings the last couple of years, was leaned on heavily. I think you saw it kind of towards the end of the year when his performance would kind of fall off a little bit. So, you know, hopefully he's back and he can be somebody that can contribute in that seventh inning and eighth when needed.
Well, at least they have the experience. I mean, they put so many resources into getting guys like Vincent and Nicasio and now Colome. Those guys are so vital. But I guess the one wake-up call that they were seeing is like, hey, you're going against teams like Boston, Houston, and the New York Yankees, and it's not easy. I mean, these teams are really good. Still, the team's in such a great spot because they are number four pretty much in the league and number four in the American League. And so the chances of making the playoffs are good. And after this series against Boston, and I keep on going over the schedule, they only have a three-game series against the Yankees in non-division winning teams and two against National League teams. Arizona was batting .227 and the Dodgers, and so they can at least hold serve and stay at that 90-91 pace level for wins.
Yeah, that should help get them to that level. And I think the thing that you have to remember, and I think people are getting very excited when they see the Mariners, you know, in the top four right now, is those top three are super teams. And that doesn't mean that the Mariners can't get there, but I think that those teams are kind of where they are going to be for the remainder of the year as far as the talent that they have and the established talent that they have. I think the Mariners are a team that have the potential to continue to build, to continue to improve, and I think one thing that will contribute to that, and I think that it kind of really struck me in New York more than anywhere else, you want to say that, wow, they're doing great without Robinson Cano. They miss Robinson Cano. That bat in the middle of the order is very, very important. You will get him back at some point in August, and that is something that's going to help for that push, I think, towards the postseason. So I think with the young pitching that you have on this team, and I think with the bullpen that's really still kind of rounding into shape, I think that the Mariners have the potential for improvement and perhaps peak at the right time toward the end of the year. But make no mistake, when you're talking Houston, when you're talking New York, when you're talking Boston, they're on a different level right now. So, you know, to me, that's interesting. And the schedule is going to play in the Mariners' favor, not only in that the competition, they'll be playing more teams under 500, but they'll also have more opportunities against Houston, which will be good. And also the travel is not going to be as bad. This is our last trip east of the Mississippi right now.
Now, it's safe to say now, I'll throw the stats at you, and this probably overdoes it, okay, because when Robinson was in there, they're 23-17. They scored 4.6 runs a game. Now, without him, they're 23-12. They've scored 131 runs, which is 4.03. Could it be that they are, could he be worth half a run a game?
I think so. I think that it's not just what he does with his own personal stats, it's what he does for those around him, and it's also, it legitimately helps lengthen that lineup. They've got a good long lineup, which is still very tough. When Mike Zunino at any time, batting eighth or ninth, can send a ball over the fence, you know that's a long lineup. But if you put Robinson Cano back in there, particularly if Mitch Haniger is hitting well with Nelson Cruz there. And then if Ryan Healy has that pop behind, and if Kyle Seager can get something going on a consistent basis, that's the middle of the order that is going to be very, very, very tough. Not just lengthening in that regard, but there's going to be no breaks for the pitcher. And not only does that, you know, kind of add up as far as runs, but you also in that case are getting those pitchers a lot of stress pitches, getting the starters, good starters, out of games early. And I think it just helps on so many different aspects. I think it goes way beyond what he does in his four at-bats a game. I think it has an impact on the entire lineup.
Now, another injury to update. Gene Segura missed last night because of a strange infection. Scott Service didn't know where he got it. Just he had an infection, and so better to just take the chance and just not play him. Does it look good for him being able to play this series?
I don't know about this series. I know that after the game yesterday, they weren't too optimistic that he would play today. So I did see him in the clubhouse last night, which was good. I was a little concerned that maybe we wouldn't see him. And, you know, these things, infections in clubhouses can be very scary. But it doesn't appear that it is, you know, to that level. So I think we're just going to have to wait and see. But I would be surprised if he was in the lineup today.
Okay. So now another interesting thing is going to be Wade LeBlanc going up with another matchup against Stephen Wright, and we're not talking about the comedian, we're talking about the pitcher. But what's interesting, and this is another test to see, Boston's not good against left-handed pitching. I mean, they're batting 236, and again, the league average is about 245. The Mariners, by the way, are the fifth best against left-handed pitching at 267 as far as the batting average. And as far as Boston, I mean, it's a 298 OBP. It's a 372 slugging. I mean, they're just not very good against left-handers. And you saw that Paxton and LeBlanc did great against them.
Yeah, well, Paxton actually stumbled against them. That he came out of that game early against them. LeBlanc did do very well against them. Paxton's done well against them in the past. I think for Wade, it's going to be tough. I mean, they've seen him now, and he's, you know, there's not going to be any surprises with him. If Wade is on with all of his pitches and has his location, well, his gift right now is that he can keep hitters off balance. And if a team struggles to hit lefties and he has, you know, all corners of the strike zone at his disposal, he can go out there, and it doesn't matter what team it is, he can have success. So I think that is the biggest thing with him. If he's a little off and his pitches are kind of leaking over into the middle of the plate, they're going to pound that regardless of his handedness right there. But, you know, the amazing thing with Wade for me is we just haven't seen very many games where he has been off. He has been able to just go after them and attack the corners of the strike zone, and his command this year has been pretty remarkable.
Now, one thing that Danny O'Neill brought up yesterday, we talked about this under further review, is that James Paxton, you know, there's maybe an issue with a hand cramp, and Danny kind of went back to when the Tampa Bay series after three innings, and before that, his earned run average was in the twos. Since that game, his earned run average has been nine, so what he's wondering, could there be something, you know, obviously it's something that he can fix as the game goes on. You saw he gave up the four runs last night and then pretty well did well until he had to be taken out after five. Can that be something as a grip issue and a delivery issue that could be giving him something that's a little bit of a problem?
It's a question worth asking, but I don't think that is the case right now. When he had the cramp, it was a little bit in his forearm, and it was very specific. It was on his breaking pitches. It was on his cutter, and he was not getting on top of the ball, so they basically had him stop throwing it in that game. Yesterday, he threw 17 cutters, and it actually was one of his best pitches. Nobody put one in play. So if he was feeling something, I think he would stay away from that pitch altogether, and we just didn't see that yesterday.
Okay, one of the fun things seems to be what's going on with Ichiro, because whether it's the push to get him into the home run contest at the All-Star game or now him being on the bench in disguise, what's going on? Because obviously he's creating a lot of fun things for this team.
Yeah, you know, it's been great to see, because you look at the situation, and we've never seen this before. It's like he does everything except plays in the game, and I've never heard of a player being allowed to do that, and nobody I know has heard of a player being allowed to do that, and he is, and it's working. And I think there were some people that were giving it sideways glances when it happened, and my feeling was, if the guys in the clubhouse don't mind, I don't think anybody else should mind, and they don't. They're enjoying having Ichiro in there. You see him talking to teammates. He talks with Guillermo Heredia quite a bit. Saw him helping D. Gordon with bunting in batting practice yesterday, or 2 days ago in New York. And Ichiro, it's funny because it was Scott Service who started the home run derby thing, and it was kind of as a joke. He said, Ichiro just keeps giving me a hard time behind the scenes all the time. I thought I'd get him back. And Ichiro had no idea that Scott had gone on national radio and started his campaign for the home run derby. And he arrived in the clubhouse, reporters were telling him that, and he just started laughing. He said, I didn't know my manager was a funny guy. And I asked, are you going to get him back? Are you even? He said, I'll get him back, and then I'll get him back again. But he didn't want to do the home run derby out of respect for the game. That's not something they haven't had retired players come back and do it before. But he left open the idea to perhaps throwing, pitching in the home run derby, which is he's thrown two early batting practices to the team so far. And then yesterday, the Bobby Valentine disguise, and he had said when he, quote, didn't retire, because he keeps pointing out, I am, you know, going to play next year, that he might sneak back out on the bench in a disguise because he's not allowed during the game. So he did that yesterday. From what I understand, it was just one inning. We couldn't see it from where we were. But really remarkable that he is able to have fun with it. The manager's able to have fun with it. His teammates seem to enjoy him. And Ichiro, he hasn't changed his routine one bit. He is still doing everything he does before games. On the off day in New York, he actually went to Yankee Stadium and took some batting practice on his own and ran the bases. He's determined to play next year. I don't know what his chances are for that, but in his mind, this is kind of a little just a playing sabbatical or hiatus, and he's kind of approaching everything as he normally would. A very different situation, but one that the guys are actually having fun with.
It's been fun to watch, and of course now we'll see what if he's going to be in disguise or what he's going to do tonight, but he seems like he has something scheduled every time. Hey, Shannon, thank you for joining us. We've been listening over the weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, John.
That's Shannon Dreher joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we go behind the lines because we'll check out what's going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And each day at 10:45, we go behind the lines to check out what's going on in the National Football League. And the big news today is Jameis Winston. Nothing official coming yet from the league, but it's expected and reported yesterday by several sources that Winston's going to get a 3-game suspension, first 3 games of the year, for allegedly groping a Uber driver named Jessica. Now, in this incident, it happened in Scottsdale, Arizona, in the Arizona area, and it was one where it was no formal charge, but the word got out. And this was in 2016. And so what's happened is apparently, you know, he's met with the commissioner, with attorneys and his agent and all that stuff. And he's agreed to accept a 3-game suspension. Now, under player conduct, a groping incident or anything that involves bad behavior can be at least 6 games. And there was some thought it was going to be as much as 8. Normally, it's going to be 6. But talk about, bad timing. And it really has caused a big stir naturally in Tampa. I know one of the columnists at the St. Pete Times came out and said they should get rid of him. I know that the team supports him. I know that the players like him. I know he shows good leadership. Sure, he's sometimes a little standoffish, and he's got a pretty lengthy history of doing bad things, whether it's taking crab out of a grocery store or making a very lewd comment at a lunchtime thing. I mean, he had the incident with a girl that was, at least never, it was settled out of court and all that stuff. But now you add this, and the bad part for the team is the fact he's not going to be there for an opening schedule that includes a road trip against New Orleans, a home game against Philadelphia, and a game against Pittsburgh. I mean, that's 3 playoff teams, and Tampa, with Dirk Cutter trying to fight for his job, now it could be off to an 0-3 start. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think they're fortunate to have one of the better backups in the league to be able to fill in. Fitzpatrick got about 3 games last year. But this could really damage this team without him, and an 0-3 start could be fatal because they're in the toughest division in football, the NFC South, the division that has Drew Brees, it has Cam Newton, and they've got just great great play. I mean, they got three playoff teams. I mean, so, and Tampa's in fourth. And if they go 0-3, that could really zap the energy out of them and put them in a spot that they might not be able to bounce back from. And so that, I think, is going to be one that is unfortunate. And, you know, the contract situation for Winston, because, you know, Winston's in a position where they gave him the $20-plus million fifth-year option. But, of course, they could take that away. It's only guaranteed for injury only. We saw that happen with injury only things with Colin, with Ryan Shazier. I know, you know, Floyd, the defensive tackle in Minnesota, he had one of those, and so he got paid off. And so if something would happen injury-wise that would last past March of next year, then Winston would be on the line for that. But I think the debate in Tampa, is this the final straw with Winston? And Mara, I flat out say no. I think that you know, they are going to stand by him. They're not going to be happy that he's going to miss three games. And again, we're still waiting for the official word from the league. But you know, Jameis has put himself in a tough spot.
Well, yeah. I mean, we won't debate, I guess, whether it should be the final straw. I definitely think he's had plenty of chances to prove that he can stay out of trouble and do the right thing, and he has not done that. So I agree with people that, you know, something maybe should be done, but I agree with you that I don't think that he will be kicked out of the league for this at all. I think that, you know, when you take someone early in the draft like that, especially a quarterback that you think can be your franchise quarterback, they're not going to give up on him yet. But I do think that even on the field, he has needed to prove himself more lately. When he was out with a shoulder injury last year, Ryan Fitzpatrick went 2-1. The Bucs only won 5 games all year last year, so he only won 3 games. Mm-hmm. And so it's not even, I don't even know if it's that big of a difference to not have him in the first 3 games at this point. I think they were expecting him to take a step forward this year, but he, I think not only his decision-making off the field is in question, but I think he has needed to grow on the field as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, the one thing that has been an off-and-on problem, and it was supposed to be an off-and-on problem, because he's a gunslinger. He's going to throw interceptions. And I know that the first thing that Dirk Cutter did when he took over as the offensive coordinator was to try to make sure that didn't happen. And I know for a while that was working. But I think that he does press a little bit. But, boy, he's a talent, because he's a quarterback that can get you 4,000 yards in a season. I mean, he can throw touchdown passes. He's got a strong arm. And I know that I remember an interview that I had with him and how smart he is. Now, again, some of the things he's doing off the field aren't smart, but, you know, what they did, and this is a story that came from the front office, is that, you know, they brought him in, and they know he has a photographic memory. So they sat him down in a room, and they put a whole bunch of plays out there. I think it was probably 10 plays, and on each play, he put all the options on that play, you know, which routes the guys were going to go, where they were going to be. And so they said, now, you want to take some notes? And Winston said, no, I don't need to do that. And you know, they took him around purposely around the building for 2 hours, and they brought him back in the room, and they had the board removed. And they said, okay, can you go over those 10 plays? And he went through it one by one, position by position, play by play, and had it 100% correct. That's how smart he is. And I remember talking to him about you know, his love for football. And what he said is that, oh, I've been watching it since I was 6 years old. And I said, so what did you watch? He says, what I was watching the movement of the defensive backs, because as a quarterback, I wanted to make, and this is 6 years old. He said, you know, he's basically thinking he's going to be a quarterback. And he says, I was watching, trying to see what positions they're going to be and what throws I could make in certain areas to beat them. The only problem is, on TV angles, you just don't get that. I mean, you get it on the film stuff, which is now available, but how smart is this guy as a quarterback? But again, his off the field right now is causing him and the Bucs a lot of problems.
Yeah, and you know, then they go ahead and draft Vita Vea in the draft. They did do a little bit of work on their defense. They needed a back last year. They got Ronald Jones out of USC. Do you think that that is going to help their offense at all?
Oh, it'll help their offense, but right now their offense, I think, is going to get off to a slow start. I mean, I think that you know, without Winston, because again, he is the leader. I know that, as you mentioned, I mean, Ryan went in there, Fitzpatrick, and won 2 out of 3 games, but the offense is so much better because of what Winston's able to do. And, you know, they really kind of screwed it up last year, because, you know, they needed a draft in an offseason like this year where they picked up defensive players, because I know when I talked talked to the general manager a bunch, and he understands the theory. It's like, okay, you're building the team from scratch, and obviously at some point you have to get the quarterback, but it takes 2 years to build the offense, 2 years to build the defense. And last year he kind of changed a little bit because he switched over and took O.J. Howard because he was such a talented tight end. It was supposed to be the second year of drafting to defense, and he left himself void a little bit at the running back position because, you know, they never really fully endorsed Doug Martin, and Doug's either been up or down, and he had suspension and all that stuff. And so the offense just went south, and the defense just wasn't any good. Now they've added Jason Pierre-Paul, Vita Vea, you know, they've added Akeem Spence. I mean, they've got a lot of additions on that defense that can make them better. They still have some question marks at safety, but now with Jameis Winston, and again, you start off against three teams like New Orleans, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh. Those are three of the best offenses in the league. That defense is going to get tested early, and the offense may not be good enough to catch up. Tough position to be in. So that's the story on Behind the Lines on what's going on with Tampa Bay, what's going on with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and definitely what's going on with Jameis Winston. Okay, now the Mariners have a big series coming up here, going up against the Boston Red Sox. We'll get into more of that. But coming up next, I did a story for 710sports.com on contracts and some of the contracts that are up. And I think right now the Seahawks have roughly 21 free agents, but they have some interesting decisions. What do you do with Frank Clark, Tyler Lockett, Earl Thomas, KJ Wright? We're going to get into that, but you also want to get your reactions. What if you were going to be John Snyder, what do you do with some of the upcoming free agents? Give us a call at 866-979-3776, 206-421-3776. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.